Thanks very much for joining us on another episode of the OHL podcast. We had barely hit published on last week's episode when the Saginaw Spirit pulled off a deal with their I-75 rivals in Flint. I thought we had better relationships with executives in this league, that they'd go and sewer us like that. So, Dave Drinkle, consider yourself off the Christmas card list. But Dan Mahar over there, you'll find him on Twitter at Dan Mahar. I'm Mike Farwell at Farwell_OHL. And remember, shoot us an email anytime on this pod, OHLpodcast@rogers.com. Okay, Dan, the aforementioned trade that Dave Drinkle didn't have the decency of making before we published last week's episode. Ethan Hay comes from Flint to Saginaw, not to be confused with Gavin Hayes. People have been doing a lot of that this week, but Ethan Hay in exchange for 6 draft picks, 2 seconds, 2/3, a 5th, and a 7th go back the Firebirds way. What say you about the Ethan Hay trade?
Well, I mean, my initial reaction was that's a steep price to pay for kind of a middle six center. But then you think about it and you think, well, there's obviously an inner division tax there that you're going to pay a higher price. And I've always given GMs credit when they identify a player they want, they go get them, figure out whatever that cost is. And I think Dave Drinkle said that was a guy they had wanted for a while. They'd seen a lot of him playing in Flint, noted as one of the best defensive centers in the league, which comes in extremely handy in the playoffs and as you're trying to make your way through a Memorial Cup tournament. So there's a lot of things they like about his game. I think some of the fans were put off a little bit by the point total. So that's not an offensive outburst for someone returning that many picks. But again, it's a need they addressed that they felt they had to do. And GMs that want to win have to step up and do that. So, and I think his Gavin Hayes and his former Flint teammates got a little revenge on him this week with a win over Saginaw. But I think it's all part of the plan that that Drinkle's put in place for this year. It's the first shoe to drop.
Okay, so moving on to point number 2 on this podcast, because I agree completely with everything you just said. Initially, you think 6 picks, that's a lot. Let's put this in perspective, and you've touched on a number of things that I would have touched on as well. It's a divisional rival. It's a state rival, and you would have been seeing an awful lot of Ethan Hay, right? Also, perspective, the 6 picks used to acquire Ethan Hay does not even add up to the sum total received in the Pavel Minchikov deal last year that Saginaw pulled off when they got 3 seconds, 4/4, and 2/5 in the Minchikov deal with Ottawa. That notwithstanding, I think the key for me, again, just to echo some of the things you touched on, if you're going to win a Memorial Cup, you're not going to do it exclusively with the Michael Mises and Zane Parekhs of the world. It's just not the way that it works. So you need a guy like Ethan Hay, you're right, whose point totals aren't going to dazzle you necessarily, because when you think 6 picks, you think, oh, big stud offensive player. What's going to dazzle you with Ethan Hay is all of the little things he does away from the puck. This guy's got one of the best 200-foot games in the league. He's very responsible defensively. So when he's on the ice with Zane Parekh and Zane Parekh is below the other team's goal line, Ethan Hay is going to help pick up a little bit of that defensive slack for the Saginaw Spirit. I will, as much as I loathe comparables, and I'll show my Western Conference bias here, but I will compare Ethan Hay to some degree to a Scott Timmins. A Scott Timmins who was a key piece of Windsor's back-to-back Memorial Cups in 2009 and 2010. Now, I'll grant you Timmins played a decidedly third-line checking center's role. Ethan Hay will likely work into the top 6, but he's going to be that guy that's responsible at both ends of the rink. He's going to kill penalties for you like a champ. And Scott Timmins, ask Jeff Skinner. Yes, that Jeff Skinner and his 70 goals his rookie season, if you count the playoff goals, ask him who he hated playing against the most during that Rangers playoff run in 2010. It was Scott Timmins. Guys like that round out championship rosters, and I think that's what Dave Drinkle has gone and done for the Saginaw Spirit. He's not done either. I'm sure we all know that, but when you're looking initially, ooh, 6 picks for a guy that scored 17 goals last year. Yeah, it's a whole lot more than that when you talk about Ethan Hay.
Yeah, well said, Mike, all around. I think when you look at Saginaw's lineup, if you're trying to look at vulnerabilities, it would be those little things you talked about and the ability to keep the puck out of their net. And I think you got to give GMs credit that properly assess their needs and go out and address them. And I think time and again, often we'll see GMs throughout junior hockey and the NHL for that matter, add pieces that they've already got. And they just kind of add to a component that the team's already strong on. And you say, well, what about this? You didn't really address these two things, which you needed. So it's hard to look at this trade and not tip your cap to Dave Drinko and say, yeah, he addressed a need. And if you're going to get the Memorial Cup, you're going to need those guys that can shut down. And this is, like you said, it's a piece of the puzzle. And he acquired the assets last year to go and get them. So why not?
You mentioned that this is the first shoe to drop, so to speak. I gotta say, I'm really liking this. I've mentioned this on earlier pods, the Gaudreau, pardon me, trade that happened already this season. I love the fact that we're not kind of waiting for some artificial, well, it's not really artificial, but you know what I mean. Like, let's not wait until the final days to make this big splash. If you have a need to address, let's address it now. And not again trying to compare the players, but Brennan Othman was the first big shoe to drop, arguably last season, and he was acquired by Peterborough in a trade with Flint in November. So this just backs up the calendar a little bit more. I'm all for it. Trade when you want to trade. If a player's going to help you and he's on the market when you make that phone call, make the trade. You don't have to wait till January 9th or 10th. I'm fine with this.
Well, yeah, we've talked about this before. It just makes sense to me. Why would you wait? You get longer service time from the player. And you referenced so Flint's jumping in here to move assets early in the year. And I think that's smart. And curiously, they got more for Ethan Hay than they did for Brendan Othman, which some might debate. But yeah, jump on it when it's there, especially if you're the acquiring GM. Why wait till there's an arms race in January or some artificial deadline in November? Go get them early, assimilate them into your lineup and reap the rewards. Price tends to be lower too. It just makes too much sense.
All right, just got an email today from Elam coming in just at the right time. And like I said, as we started this episode of the OHL podcast, send us an email anytime, OHLpodcast@rogers.com. We'll always address it on the pod. Elam says, hey, Mike and Dan, hope you two are doing well. Should Saginaw Spirit fans be hitting the panic button after this last weekend where they dropped all three of their games? Not a great start for the Memorial Cup hosts. Love the show as always. Cheers, Elam. Dan, what do you think? Should they be hitting the panic button in Saginaw?
Well, thanks for the email, Elam. I'm gonna just throw this out there and say we're just running up to trick or treat time now. So I am gonna say definitely early to hit the panic button. We can settle down. I know it doesn't look good when you see your team on the wrong end of the standings at this point in the season. They've had some time. Things aren't quite coming together yet. You know the core there is terrific. You know the coaching's there. You know there's gonna be pieces added. I think it's well too early to hit any kind of panic button. I think this is, if anything, there's a little bit of a silver lining to a start like this too, where it does give your GM some time and your coach some time to assess and say, okay, here's where we're weak. We were thinking we're a little stronger in this area, but we have to go out and do something. So I'd rather that happen now than after the trade deadline or later in the year when you say, oh wow, we were vulnerable here. We didn't realize it. So definitely early to hit the panic button, in my opinion, Mike. I don't know what you have to say.
Yeah, I mean, fans, by all means, that's your job. Hit the panic button. Start screaming in the streets of Saginaw, Michigan. But other than that, it's 11 games in. I thought it was the fewest played, but there are a handful of other teams that have only played 11. But that means there are 57 games left to play. I will confess that I thought, and again, it's probably my Western Conference bias or OHL bias showing here. But you look at the previous Memorial Cup hosts in the O, and they've come out really strong and run through the league pretty powerfully through most of the season. I know Windsor got bounced in the first round in 2017, but it had nothing to do with their regular season record. They were a very strong team in a very strong conference. All of that notwithstanding, it's so early. We talked last week about the excitement in some cities like Mississauga and Kitchener, maybe a bit of ahead of projections, and fans are understandably excited, but it's so early in the season. So yes, fans are understandably concerned in Saginaw, but I promise you, based on what I've seen from this organization, and that goes from the ownership on down, they're gonna figure things out over the next 57 games. And when all the dust settles at the end, in my estimation, it's still almost certainly going to be Saginaw and London. I know Guelph, don't hate me too much yet, but Saginaw and London kind of pushing each other towards the finish line.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of have a little rule of thumb when I look at junior hockey, Mike, which is the first 10 games. Throw out the first 10 games. You get some good storylines, you get some surprises, some disappointments, but anything that happens in the first 10 games in virtually any league, any season, except football, of course, where their season isn't long. But in hockey, 10 games, throw it away. Figured out that the one guarantee I have for you, I may not be great at predictions, but the standings are not going to look anything at the end of the year like they do today.
So you
So
mean Saginaw's not going to stay in ninth place in the Western Conference?
I'm going to go with a no on that, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, would they rather have been out to a stronger start, 10-1, something like that? Of course, but I don't think anybody's panicking outside some select fans in Saginaw. And they've got a whole season and a Memorial Cup run to enjoy after this, so they can just, like Dan said, take those first 10 games, toss them out the window. One more minor transaction that just came down. Connor Toms is no longer with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. He goes over to the Windsor Spitfires in exchange for a 12th round pick. Interestingly enough, Toms was a third rounder to the Sioux in 2020. Now he goes to Windsor for a 12th rounder. This, to me, it's just dealing Sault Ste. Marie is from a position of depth here, right? They still have 7D on the roster. And when you saw Toms not play any of the games this weekend, I think the writing was on the wall that he'd be the odd man out.
Yeah, and actually, I like these trades a lot, Mike. They seem like minor bit pieces, but really the underlying theme here is teams giving players an opportunity. So you have a player that you drafted, you were high on. For whatever reason, he's not fitting into your puzzle a year or two later. And instead of making him sit and languish or return to Junior B, shop around the league. Look who needs a little bit of depth and give the kid an opportunity. And we've seen it time and time again in the OHL where every year there's 9 or 10 players who are buried somewhere and end up playing a role somewhere else and carving out an OHL career. So I love that these GMs try and do this for these kids that are a little bit on the bubble, give them some other opportunity where they can shine.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best parts of this in my mind too. Connor Toms is going to get a lot of chance to showcase himself in Windsor, get a lot of ice time. A 19-year-old defenseman on that team is going to get a boatload of opportunity. And if a kid's getting opportunity in a league with one team where he wasn't getting it with the other, I think you're spot on. Okay, Dale Hunter has just continued to do the inevitable. As we shift to the other big story of this week. And the inevitable is, in my opinion, that Dale Hunter will leave this game when he decides to leave it as the winningest coach in Ontario Hockey League history. But he passed the late Bert Templeton this week. It took him a couple of tries. We thought that he might get it the weekend prior, but the Knights dropped both games. And then with a win over the Ottawa 67s, is that irony or what? Dale Hunter becomes the second winningest coach in OHL history with 908. For what it's worth, Brian Kilgrey has 1,193. So 286 more wins for Dale Hunter will give him the most coaching wins in the OHL. What have you to say about number 908 for Dale Hunter?
Well, obviously, a huge congratulations. That's a massive number and acquired in not all that many years when you think about it. But that's a guy that runs at, 45, 50 wins a year, which is pretty crazy. So when you put it in that context, yeah, getting those extra, 200 and some odd wins, it looks like it's possible. It's just kind of funny when you say that number that Brian Kilgrey had and you still need 280 wins to go. That's a really good career for a lot of coaches, a really good career. So Dale Hunter just has to put in one more really good career to catch Kilroy.
Yeah, so you talk about not too many years and those kinds of numbers. So I couldn't help but break it down. And I want to be clear about this as I do. I don't think Brian Kilgrey has a peer in junior hockey. Dale Hunter is almost certainly going to pass him for career coaching wins, but Brian Kilgrey's impact on the game and his and I'm not taking anything away from Dale, but it's just Brian Kilgrey has cemented himself as a legend in junior hockey. The stories that we've heard on this podcast from some of his former players, as he picks them up when they get traded to Ottawa, he takes them home, feeds them, like he and his wife will sit down to dinner with these young men, all these other things, not to mention just what he's meant to the game of hockey at the major junior level across this country. And that's not to detract anything that Dale Hunter has meant, but Brian Kilgrey is just a step above, in my opinion, and is without peer, as I said, in this league. But Dale Hunter and his numbers coaching wise are light years ahead of Kilrays. Kilray was behind the bench for 33 years to amass those 1,193 wins. So you break it down, it works out to about 36 wins per season. Hunter is in year number 21. He's got 908. That's 43 wins on average per season, which means he's about 7 seasons away from passing Kilray's number, which means further, he'll do it in less than 30 years, what took Kilray more than 30 years to do. And you just look at the numbers from Dale Hunter and the impact, and it's absolutely uncanny. He takes over an 0-1-0-2 after 18 games and goes the remainder of the way, finishes in eighth spot with that London Knights team. And then that London Knights team promptly goes and knocks off the number one seeded Plymouth Whalers in round number one. That's Dale Hunter's partial season behind the bench, his first year. After that, give him the following season, then one season more, and they begin a run of four straight first place finishes for the London Knights under Dale Hunter. It was another 10 years after that before they ever saw an eighth place finish again. And that was in 2010, 2011, when they lost in the first round. And the next year, it was first place again. And it was first place again the year after that. The London Knights under Dale Hunter have only finished lower than fourth in 02, 03, in 2010, 2011, and in 17, 18. Only 3 times in his full seasons behind the bench. It's absolutely incredible. And they've never missed the playoffs and only been eliminated in the first round 4 times over 21 years. I don't know how you argue with that success, not to mention, of course, the 2 Memorial Cups, 6 OHL finals, 4 of which the London Knights won, both losses coming against Peterborough, coincidentally. 2 Memorial Cups and 3 OHL championships for Kilray too. But the numbers are just, they're almost mind-numbing what Dale Hunter has been able to do. And the Knights put out a great video on their Instagram feed following number 908. And if you ever wondered how much the players love to play for Dale and how much Dale loves those players, go back and watch that video because it's pretty special stuff. And you see them really having a moment. Of course, Dale Hunter got that game puck for win number 908. So I know I've gone on at some length here, but I just found the numbers that incredible. And having spoken to Brian Kilray on this podcast as well, I'll tell you that he was very quick to tell us, Brian Kilray was, that the Hunters deserve everything they get. Brian Kilray says they bring that old farmer's mentality to the game of hockey. They're up early, they work hard, they work late, they make sure the job gets done. And it's incredible what Dale Hunter has done in a comparatively short period of time to Brian Kilray.
Yeah, excellent background there, Mike. And for all those numbers you just rattled off is the reason why I don't want to get into a comparison who's better between Dale Hunter and Brian Kilrea. I just, in my opinion, I have a hard time not believing Dale Hunter's cream of the crop, period. And for all those numbers you just rattled off, basically he doesn't have down years. And
Right.
in junior hockey, which is nearly impossible, he doesn't have down years. They have maybe 1 year here and there, and then spool right up again, which is just a phenomenal feat in and of itself. And I know people may be cringing to hear that because everyone loves to hate London and the Green Empire. But if you think about it, that Green Empire is Dale Hunter. It didn't, before that, they were just a run-of-the-mill junior hockey team. It's the Hunter era, these past 21 years, that have solidified that empire, if you will. That's where that image comes from. That's where that reputation comes from, because they were so good, because they were so competitive. And I just don't see any real strong argument to not suggest that Dale Hunter's right cream of the crop in terms of junior hockey coaches.
That's an excellent point. And I don't know why that I keep in the back of my mind. Like, I'm sure this won't happen. But to me, the only way Dale Hunter does not pass Brian Kilray is if he decides to not pass Brian Kilray, right? Coaches to 1,193 and then says, okay, I'm out of respect or something. But I think he's too much of a competitor to do that. It's just in the back of my mind. But to me, that's the only way Dale Hunter does not leave this game as the winningest coach in Ontario Hockey League history. And I don't think there's really much of a chance that he would defer when the opportunity arises. Maybe that's just me looking for a good story. I don't know. But anyway.
You might be right. I mean, everything you said makes sense to me, just the competitiveness of the hunters, the competence of the hunter family. Having said that, I will just point out 280 is a lot of wins. Dale Hunter's not a particularly young guy. I mean, there might be a point where you require so much time and energy to put into this gig. It's like you said, it's that farmer mentality. And year over year over year of doing that, it drains you. There may come a time when Dale Hunter looks back and says, that's a lot of time and energy that, I'd rather sit this one out. So it's possible that the 280 number is a big number still to achieve. So I'm not willing to just hand it to him yet. That's a long way to go. But like you said, it'll probably be on his terms.
Brian Kilray's 89. You'll still see him at the rink. I'll just put that out there for you. But your point is taken. Last week on the pod, we talked about a couple of Europeans being returned to the Ontario Hockey League, Dalibor Dvorsky in Sudbury, Philip Machar in Kitchener. And things are just tickety-boo with both of those guys, I guess. Dvorsky, 5 points in the four games he's played, and Machar, 4 points in the two games that he's played.
Yeah, I mean, both high-end talents, both first-round picks in the NHL draft. Dvorsky, like I mentioned in a previous podcast, I believe had several teams that had him ranked top five. That's how highly thought of he was. I think with both players or with any player coming to the league, we need to be patient. There's a learning curve. There's a time, and I know Philip Machar was here last year, so his spool-up time will be shorter. But having said that, we know there's a whole new coaching staff there, a whole new system, and it takes time to learn it. And one of the things I'm keeping an eye on is that Ranger team, which has played so well, basically had a month of training camp to learn what UC Hokus wanted them to do. And Philip Machar has had a couple practices here and there. And I think in his first couple games, we saw a lot of good and a bit of bad, where he's going to have to learn that system in terms of how he wants to the back pressure and avoiding some of the wrist passes. But phenomenal talent that's just going to bolster that Kitchener offense, which is already potent. And then Sudbury, if they needed anything, that's exactly what they needed. That elite two-way forward that could slide in right behind Goyette or wherever they choose to put him in the lineup. It just gives you that extra potency that a team looking to challenge Saginaw in that Memorial Cup this year needed. So a great thing to keep an eye on this year, but I expect that those numbers will definitely rise for Dvorsky as we go. 5 points in four games is nothing to sneeze at, but I think that's a guy who's potential to put up 100 in a full season here.
We've got a couple of big and pretty serious stories to talk about around the game of hockey still to come on this episode of the OHL podcast. Before we do that, just a few what I like to call drive-bys, one of which goes back to coaching. And I gotta love this story because it makes me chuckle. And I don't think it's ever to be broken, if you call it a record. But Troy Mann, the third new head coach in the OHL this year, joins the Kingston Frontenac staff for the dismissed Luca Caputi. Mann wins his first game behind the bench. Way to go, Coach Mann. And then promptly picks up a two-game suspension because one of his players left the bench as time expired to get involved in some shenanigans. So one win, two-game suspension for Troy Mann.
Yeah, I don't know if there's such thing as a coaching Gordie Howe hat trick, but it's got to be something like that. That's impressive. So congrats, Pere, on your start in the league.
Another one. We talked last week about the late birthday rule and how we just love to see things revert to calendar year. But interesting feedback I got on that was, one, the birthday rule was put in place because the NHL season used to start sooner and you needed to be 18 years of age in order to sign a professional contract. So they obviously needed that. And we also talked about Fantilli and Carlson last week, and actually it was Carlson who was a late birthday. So Fantilli's not a full year and change older. Fantilli's just a few months older than Carlson. So thought I'd throw that in there too.
Yeah, and I know the birthday debate comes around all the time, and there's all kinds of reasoning, but I think the key phrase in what you just uttered was used to. And I think we've always got workarounds now, and we can figure out ways to change the things that need to be changed, if that's the desire. But yeah, the birthday, I'd like to see it change for no other reason than how many fans it confuses. So we'd stop the confusion. So.
I love that you're listening and keeping us honest on these things. Love getting the feedback too, because that's what we're here to do, talk about hockey. One more thing that just caught my attention, Dan, that I thought I'd throw in there is the Hunter Brustevich point streak, which has now reached 12 games, 25 points. The defenseman leading the Ontario Hockey League in scoring so far this season. But just what struck me is that Hunter Brustevich was left off the score sheet. He didn't have a single point in his first game, and he's had at least 1 point in every game since. He did the same thing last season as a rookie in this league. He was held off the score sheet in his inaugural game and then went on a 10-game assist, mind you, no goals, but still a 10-game assist streak during which he picked up 13 assists. But for whatever reason, Hunter Brustevich does not like game one. I don't know. I thought it was interesting. I'd throw it in there as a drive-by.
Yeah, and this year he's just upped the point pace. So last year, the 13 points in 10 games. This year, he's like 2 points a game. And the other thing you'll notice is last year, for the full season, I believe 6 goals, already sitting at five. So starting to trust that shot a little more and get it through. And type of progression teams love to see of their draft picks. And I'm pretty sure the Vancouver Canucks are smiling about this so far.
All right, still to come, we've had tragedy on the ice. We'll remember Adam Johnson. I'm a little bit concerned about something that I don't think is all that little. We'll talk about it. And of course, our prospects of the week. Why do I get the feeling we're going to have the same prospect this week, Dan? I don't know, but something tells me we'll find out as we continue with the OHL podcast. All right, one of the things I wanted to flag this week was gambling. And look, I'm not trying to infer by any stretch that there are Ontario hockey leaguers currently involved in anything gambling related or damaging to the game. I'm also going to add, I'm no prude when it comes to laying the occasional bet. Well before we could do so on every website everywhere, I was making trips to casinos in Windsor when it was the only one in Ontario. I've been to Vegas. I've been to Atlantic City. I've been sports wagering for a very long time. I'm not a prude, but do I see the pitfalls in it? Absolutely. And what struck me and why I wanted to bring it up, obviously, it's the Shane Pinto story. First of all, I don't think the National Hockey League is helping anyone with the complete absence of detail around what exactly Shane Pinto did to get a suspension that lasts half the season. Like, this has got to be pretty severe, doesn't it? But the other thing about this is Shane Pinto is 22 years old. And that's why I wanted to flag this. He'll be 23 in November of this year. But I wanted to talk about this now because he's a young hockey player. He never played in the O. So again, I'm not, and the Ontario Hockey League has a gambling policy. Players are made aware of it. Forget all that stuff. The point is, I think it's going to become increasingly difficult to keep young people away from gambling slash sports wagering when we have made wagering on the games so much a part of the coverage of the game. So I know there are rules in place. Shane Pinto somehow ran afoul of them. He's only 22 years old. Kids in the Ontario Hockey League are 16 to 20. Look out, David Branch, or whoever's coming next. Look out.
Yeah, you know, Mike, just brace yourself for a second because I'm going to go on a tiny prude rant. If you, I believe that the NHL is completely acting irresponsibly in this whole realm with using the McDavids and the Gretzkys and Austin Matthews and all these high profile players to promote something that we know has all kinds of bad outcomes and repercussions in society for family. And I know people say, oh, whatever, it's just gambling. It's not like it's smoking. It's not like it's drinking. But we know this. Like, there's studies that show how bad this is, and there's lots of people whose lives have been ruined. So I think, however you feel about that, I do get very nervous about how, like you said, how in your face it is right now, promoting it. And then almost the hypocrisy in the Pinto case where, Oh, gambling's great. Gambling's great. Go to this bookie. Go to that bookie. Go nuts. Oh, but by the way, we just suspended one of your favorite players that you paid to watch because he did something the wrong way. And like you said, the lack of detail. The audience is a lot of kids, a lot of young impressionable minds, like you mentioned. So what? How are they supposed to sort this out? What they're being fed, the messaging they're being fed. So all I'll say, I'll end there. I won't go on a huge diatribe other than to say, I'm not a fan of the overt advertising around gambling here and the hypocrisy and mixed messaging we're getting from pro athletes. I'd love to see a lot more caution exercised here because it is dangerous. It's a lot more dangerous than people realize or care to think. You want to go and enjoy some responsible fun, betting on some of your sports. That it's not the end of the world, but you're dealing with a whole different realm here when you're talking to kids and youth like this. And like you said, Pinto himself's a pretty young man.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I might liken it to the legalization of cannabis. I mean, the idea was, well, we're just gonna eat into the black market. Arguably, that hasn't even worked, but either way, we're just gonna legalize a product that people are using fairly regularly anyway. Even in the absence of legalization, the gambling was happening. But that's a whole maybe separate conversation. I think your point on the hypocrisy is spot on. And again, that's why I wanted to raise this on this podcast for players at this level, because who do you think players at this level aspire to? Do you think maybe they aspire to Connor McDavid status? Do you think maybe they aspire to Austin Matthews status? Do you think maybe they aspire to any player in the National Hockey League who's got a Bet 99 symbol on his helmet, which is what Shane Pinto did, because I'm pretty sure the Ottawa Senators were the first team to add gambling advertising to a part of their uniform. So the list of hypocrisies just goes on and on in this regard. And I just don't know how the National Hockey League takes itself seriously. When on the one hand, it's allowing its athletes, its star athletes, to endorse the gambling. So go ahead and gamble, but just not over here. And don't do it this way. So, and again, what did Shane Pinto do? What on earth could he have done? Because they said he didn't bet on hockey. So what did he do? What could you possibly have done? And if it's an issue in the NHL, again, I'll just say be very careful. Ontario Hockey League. Be very careful.
Yeah, and without going too far down speculation, it sounded like he had a proxy friend betting for him south of the border who may have himself wagered on hockey. Where the only telltale sign I have in all of this is that both Pinto and the Players Association seem to fully agree with the suspension. So whatever it was bad enough that they knew they had done wrong. But I'll just dip my toe one more time back in that initial point on the NHL, and I'll just say this. However you feel about gambling or any of these things, keep in mind one thing. The NHL is only concerned about hockey-related revenue, bolstering that pot for the owners and players. That's it. As cynical as it may sound, because we all love hockey, Mike, I enjoy watching the NHL as much as you do or anyone does. But keep that in mind. They only care about getting more out of your pocket. And none of these decisions are made with the fans in mind. None of them are. They're made with the intent of increasing that pot for the owners and players to split. And that's fine. They earn it. They can do what they want with it. But keep that in mind when you make your own personal choices in life. These gambling ads are not for your betterment or for your pleasure and enjoyment. They're for that pot that the NHL players and owners share, period. And if you remember that with everything you see coming from the NHL, you might keep in balance a little better. And I think we're going to need it with the gambling onslaught we're seeing.
You want to weigh in on any of the things we discuss, send us an email anytime, ohlpodcast@rogers.com, as we shift gears. But I take a page from what you just said. Anything in the NHL is revenue related. I might submit to you an argument that anything in the Ontario Hockey League is safety or player safety related. And so I wonder how long it will be before Ontario Hockey League teams, either themselves or by mandate from the league offices, do something like the Rochester Americans have already done, which is order more neck guards and the base layer neck guard combo clothing after the absolutely horrific incident that happened to Adam Johnson, US born player, competing over in England right now, or had been. And maybe even we'll see something in the OHL similar to the mouth guard thing that popped up last year. Let's make sure those neck guards are securely in place and this, that, and the other thing. We actually noted on one of our broadcasts this weekend that the number of neck guards that were falling on the ice, it seems to be increasing. They just kind of fall off. Anyway, obviously, this is all related to that absolutely horrific incident.
Yeah, just an awful, awful, awful story. And your thoughts just go out to Adam Johnson's family. And but yeah, this thing kind of snuck up on a lot of us in some ways, Mike. I remember growing up playing hockey, it was always mandated we had neck guards, and for obvious reasons. And then I thought about it, and like the last few years of my men's league, none of us wear neck guards, just a comfort thing. It just kind of slipped off the radar. Then you see something like this, and it just jumps right back on there. And you think of how seriously hockey has gotten about headshots, rightfully so, and damage it can do to people long term. There's really one main way you could die playing hockey, and that's from a cut to the neck. And we haven't really taken that all that seriously in a lot of levels. So, if nothing else, and you hit the nail on the head, Mike, when you said you got to give the OHL that they are serious about safety, they always have been, and sometimes to the chagrin of players. But it seems to me like it's just a matter of time. This a simple piece of cloth you put around your neck and can save your life. And I think that's been spelled out by this horrible incident.
Frankly, just going back to what I had said, we just happened to notice them as a talking point on one of our broadcasts this weekend because we had seen several over the course of the game lying on the ice. And I even wondered about the width of these neck guards. Like, look, I'm sure smarter people than I were involved in the design, but just in light of this, and then you see this little piece of fabric. And I mean, okay, I guess, but number one is we got to find a way to keep them in place. Number two is maybe. I don't know. Like, do you make them a little bit wider, a piece of material? I don't know. Again, I'll leave that to the experts. The other thing, not to be too gruesome or dark here on the podcast, but doesn't it surprise you a little bit that, in all honesty, this hasn't happened more often?
Oh, 100%. Actually, I believe I said something very long, similar to those lines yesterday when I was talking about this story with someone. When you think about it, I don't think anyone was thinking about it. But when you think about it in hindsight, like so many things, it's almost inevitable. It was going to happen at some point. And unfortunately, for in this case with Adam Johnson, he was playing in a pro league in England. But as I understand it, something like this happens, you need extremely elite level medical staff, doctors and surgeons there within a minute or two to save the person's life. And we look back at the Clint Malarchuk incident in Buffalo all those years back when his jugular was cut, and he did have that support right away. There was a Vietnam trained doctor right there. So they had resources that are the only reason Clint Malarchuk is with us today. And you look at all the rinks that doesn't exist, including this one in Nottingham in England. It was just a matter of time, Mike. And it's sad to think about when you look back, but really, when you think about it in hindsight, it was just a matter of time.
I have said many times over my years in this game, which, believe it or not, now number over 20, but based on what I've seen and some of the really ugly things that have happened, if I ever suffer any kind of medical emergency, I hope I do so in a hockey rink in Ontario because I've seen those staffs do incredible, incredible things. Tucker Tynan. How long ago was that? Two, 3 seasons, right? Still playing goal for Niagara. And everybody rightfully credited that Ice Dogs training staff with saving that young man's life.
Oh, absolutely. Your life is in someone else's hands when those things happen. Like you like to think, oh, I'm taking precautions, I'm fine out there. But as a hockey player, you're vulnerable. And when you get an injury like that, it's out of your hands, and it's entirely in the hands of who's around you. And it's not the fault of the others that couldn't help you because you need that kind of training. And like you said, in Ontario, a lot of the rinks that we see in the OHL have that benefit. But the vast majority of players playing hockey on this planet do not have that surrounding them when they play. So that's something to keep in mind.
If a memo has not already been issued, I expect some league-wide edict in the not too distant future. Just as a reminder, hey, those neck guards are around your neck for a reason. Okay. Again, just horrible. The whole hockey world mourns along with Adam Johnson's family and friends for sure. We like to wrap things up every week with a prospect of the week. I don't know why I've got this feeling, Dan, because Dan and I never talk about this in advance. All we do is get a general idea of the topics we want to discuss, and then we meet to record these things. And gosh darn it, gosh, I have a feeling that we're going to have the same guy. But I'll start with you to see if we're on the same page or not. Who's your prospect of the week, Dansky?
I'm going to ease your concerns, Mike, because I went a little off the beaten path this
Okay.
week so that we wouldn't cross over. And I like to use this segment sometimes to highlight someone that's a little off the radar. And my prospect this week, Mike, is actually Leo Sirlin on the Guelph Storm. And the reason I went there is I think Guelph losing Matthew Poitras this year, they had some need for people to step up. And Leo Sirlin, to me, just represents what you love to see in this league, a fifth round draft pick. Didn't play in the league, progressed a little bit, playing upped his offensive game, came to camp this year, determined to make the team, has just been going to the net, has been getting rewarded for good, clean, hard work, and he's been filling a little bit of an offensive void that the Guelph Storm needed filled early. So, I mean, numbers aren't blowing you off the chart, 5 goals in his first 12 games, but watch him play, does all the things the right way. And there's a kid that I think when I watch him play this year is going to be a key piece of that Storm offense for the next 2 years. So a little off the path, but I'm going with Leo Sirlin. Mike, who did you have?
That's really interesting. You would have thought we had coordinated on this because, yes, you are going off the path because only someone on the path would recognize that Jet Luchenko had his coming out party this week, didn't he? So I'm staying with the Guelph Storm, but picking perhaps the more obvious of the prospects. Not only that, he's just rated a B in the NHL list of players to watch, but I really think that when the Storm went north through North Bay and Sudbury before coming home to close out the weekend against Ottawa, Jet Luchenko had a bit of a coming out party. He's got 12 points in 12 games on the season, but 6 of those points, Dan, came in the past 3 games with 2 goals and 4 assists. So this is a player that I'm very interested in seeing more of. And for me, Jet Luchenko of the Guelph Storm is my prospect of the week. And quickly, you mentioned another name that I wanted to because I was bringing up Luchenko. You said Matthew Poitras is done. He's not, is he? Like, come on, Boston. So, as we record, the Boston Bruins are playing in Florida. That'll be game number 9 for Matthew Poitras. He's coming back to the O, isn't it? I think we have our big story for next week, one way or the other.
Yeah, I think so. So I think he's come back to the O at some point. Boston's not noted for, they want to contend. They've got a great record and they're not noted for keeping teenagers up. So there's that. I think once their cap issues alleviate as the year goes on, they're going to add a center, can return him to junior. I have been cautioned by some of my NHL contacts over the years, though, not to be too hung up on that 10 game piece, because really it's the 40 game one that kicks in that full year, and it's more to do with arbitration eligibility. So they don't really want to hit that 10-game threshold if they don't have to, but most NHL teams aren't that concerned about game 10. It's game 40 you're looking at. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Matthew Poitras stay beyond this week, but I do think he's coming back.
How scary is that for the rest of the Ontario Hockey League, primarily the Western Conference? I mean, I know it's early and we've talked about that, but the Guelph Storm, steady as she goes, climbing right up those standings and no disrespect, but doing just fine, thank you very much, without Matthew Poitras right now. Imagine putting a player of that caliber back into this Storm lineup. Ooh-wee, is that going to be fun?
Yeah, well, I think I referenced a couple times now. He was going to be my pick for leading scorer in the OHL this year. Obviously, Boston had other plans. But you throw a player of that caliber back into a roster that's already firing on most cylinders. When you beat the Ottawa 67 6-1, you're doing something right. I know it's a one-off, but still, a lot of things going well for Guelph. And if you throw Poitras back in that lineup, look out.
All right. You know the drill on this by now, I hope. Please send us an email anytime, ohlpodcast@rogers.com. Like, subscribe, tell a friend. I like to think that we have the most consistent and informative podcast about junior hockey in Ontario that you're going to find anywhere. No disrespect to the others doing stuff out there, but we love doing this. We love to hear from you. And we love it if you like, subscribe, leave us a review, and all of those other good things. Wherever you get your podcasts, we're on YouTube. I know a lot of you interact that way. It's great. Just look up OHL Podcast on all of those platforms and you'll find us for sure. Every Friday we come out with a feature interview. This week's feature interview is with a former goal. Well, he's not even former. He still plays some beer league, but he's a goaltender, so you know it's going to be weird, right? That part we've already established. This guy, Dan, drafted by the Sioux, ends up getting traded to an expansion team, goes to the Belleville Bulls, plays for a guy by the name of Larry Mavity, who challenged the team about two-thirds of the way through the season, said, "You guys aren't tough enough." So Friday's guest promptly went out to a game at Maple Leaf Gardens versus the Marlies, got into a fight, and got suspended for the rest of the season.
Is it Troy Mann?
It's not
No,
Troy Mann. No,
no,
different. So that is what you will hear with our feature guest on the OHL podcast on Friday. He's Dan Mahar. Find him on Twitter or X, whatever the hell it is, at Dan Mahar. I'm Mike Farwell at Farwell underscore OHL. Your next episode of the OHL podcast with that weird goalie comes out on Friday.
Hi, I'm Emily Roger, and I host a leadership show called The Boiling Point with my co-host, Dave Vail. Together, we sit down with trailblazing entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers who are driving meaningful change in our world. The show is all about exploring the lives and perspectives of leaders who are making a difference. Join us for insightful conversations that challenge the status quo, spark new ideas, and inspire you to take action. Find us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or at BoilingPointPodcast.com.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.